No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. That's BBS RadioOne. We have two very special guests with us tonight. James Sidnor, chairman of the Veterans and Military Families Caucus of the D.C. Democratic State Committee, and John Johnson of Veterans of Foreign Wars. And we're going to talk about our favorite subject, veterans. So please call in and join the conversation. Again, 888-627-6008, or you can Skype us. Before I go any further, though, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is getting ready to go back to home sweet home, Arizona. Hey, Kathleen, did you pack your cowboy boots and sombrero?
Yes, I did. And you know, hopefully some tequila. And you got to have that when you go to the border and visit it, right? And so,
look,
you know,
put the boots on and get on the horse before you drink the tequila.
Hey,
that's
the tequila is the way you figure out where you get home, how you get home. But yes, I'm going back to Arizona.
Yeah, maybe that's why you're in Kansas now instead of Arizona.
That's right. I'm going to go back for several weeks and then drive back through, you know, New Mexico, Colorado, and into Kansas. So, you know, it's kind of just my kind of quarterly, you know, see what's going on in the rest of the country. So, yes, I'll be leaving tomorrow.
Well, that's...
I better warn Arizona.
Mexico and Colorado are beautiful, and what a time of year to be there. It's you know, the perfect time of year to be there. Well, let's start the show. The big news this week, I should have a cowbell or something, is that we got two new sponsors for the new Columbia Admissions Act, the statehood bill. So a big, big thank you goes out to Representative Zoe Lofgren, California's 19th district, and also Kathleen. How about that? Kathleen Rice,
hey,
of New York's 4th. And for $1 million and a free trip around the world, Kathleen, can you tell me what these two faithful representatives have in common with the other 121 House co-sponsors?
Well, I was going to say that they were both women, but when you got into the specifics, I would guess they're Democrats.
There you go. And that's why you
smart.
Get top billing on the show is because
you're
brilliant. They are. They're both Democrats. Come on, Republicans. Let's get going. We need some of you on our bill. So that's the news in the statehood news this week. They just come back last week and from their long summer break. And now we got two new co-sponsors. So we're hopeful to get a couple more in the Senate soon.
That sounds great. And, you know, I'm really excited to talk to these gentlemen because, as you know, I worked for Congresswoman Pat Schroeder in the 80s. And I kind of have to feel kind of, you know, have to pat myself on the shoulder in that back in 1985, I, with another woman who was a fellow, we wrote the Military Family Act of 1985, which actually created an office, a five-star general's, you know, office with on military family policy, and gave it like a general to head it, and gave it actually funding, and created an office within the Pentagon. So I'm excited to see if that still exists, or, you know, military families are such a big thing. And we wrote that legislation, which was dental and allowing spouses to work. It was about 15 different things. So I've always been very proud of that. And so I'm excited to talk to the gentlemen who are on the show with us, which is James Sinor, who's chairman of the Veterans and Military Family Caucus, and John Johnson, who's a D.C. Democratic State Committee representative for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. So, gentlemen,
how are
backwards.
You? You got that backwards.
It's John
James
Johnson.
Who's, right, John is the VFW and James is the state committee. But that's okay, because when Kathleen worked on military issues, they were still using muskets. So
no, let's just say this, but I'm looking at the script from my partner here, Senator Brown. So we'll have to talk about that later. But anyway, gentlemen, I'm excited to talk to James and to John. But James, let me ask you, how is it in the Pentagon? Is there still an office? And I know military families are, you know, no soldier is in the military without their family. So can you tell me how it's going on in there?
Well, as far as the Pentagon is concerned, well, first of all, thank you for allowing me to be on here, both Senator Brown and Ms. Gomez. I appreciate the opportunity. As far as what's going on with the Pentagon, I am not involved with that at this particular time. But now that you brought that up, that is actually something that I can look into and try to get connected with that. So I would definitely look into that, and I'll get back with Senator Brown and have some kind of information for you.
That would be great because, excuse me, you know, when you follow up, when you create legislation that creates policy and you fund it and you create an office for it, it's you know, interesting to try to follow back to see where it is and what happened to it, because I remember specifically why we did that bill. It was a family that the soldier was going to Korea, so the family left from Ireland. It was a mixed family, 7 kids. They went to San Francisco because they had been given that advice from the Germans who were in Kaiserslautern. So they went to, you know, figure out where they would be able to go to in the United States or where you'd be able to send this family. And they said, oh, go to San Francisco. You'll be able to, you know, no problem with rent. Well, you know, that's so high. And one of the children committed suicide because they didn't have enough to eat. And that's what got Pat Schroeder's office involved in what was happening to military families. So what do you do as far as the Military Family Caucus?
Okay, my initial objective is to increase awareness in regard to vote and to promote Democratic candidates that are running for office. But let me step back real quick and go back on to the family readiness thing. Each of the services has representatives that assist the families. In the Marine Corps, we call it the Family Readiness Office. The Navy has the Ombudsman. And I'm not quite sure what the Army and Air Force call it, but their main function is to reach out to the families when soldiers, Marines, sailors, airmen are deploying or returning from deployment, and to provide the families with assistance. So there are elements in place to assist families in that regard.
And that's true. And you know what I'm talking about is this was happening in like 1982, when, you know, families weren't really recognized by the military as being part of the readiness of the soldiers. So it's good to hear that we've come really far, and you know that the families are recognized as part of the whole plan.
Absolutely. It's become a quality of life issue, and a lot of focus has been put on that. And there's a lot of resources available, and it's come a long way. So I work in my civilian capacity. I actually work very closely with the family readiness folks within the Marine Corps. So and they're very proud of what they do, and they're pretty much locked on, and they work very hard to ensure that families are taken care of.
Let me ask you, either one of you guys, James or John, we had a ceremony on Friday. It was for POWs and MIAs. Friday was an official day that was declared by Congress, I think 14, 15 years ago, to honor the service of POWs and MIAs, and also to keep alive our commitment to seek answers to where, you know, what's happened to these brave men and women, and to try to get the fullest possible accounting of what's happened to each and every one. I think there's about a little over 1,700 that are still unaccounted for. Can you, either one of us, either one of you guys, tell me what the whole thing was about on Friday? I thought it was a great ceremony, by the way.
Yes, it was.
You can take the lead on that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
No, you can take the lead on that.
Okay. Well, first of all, I need to recognize you, Senator Brown, because you were a part of that, because you gave us a moment of gratitude. I absolutely appreciate that. But what we were trying to do is, we have 36 veterans that were District of Columbia residents, that are District of Columbia residents, and we wanted to recognize them. So how this came about is, a young lady that's part of the state committee, and I apologize for misspelling her last name, it's Loquow, she said, hey, why don't we recognize these veterans? And so I took the ball, ran with it, got a lot of support from the mayor's Office of Veterans Affairs. I got a lot of support from Mr. Johnson and the Veterans of Foreign Wars. We got support from the Marine Color Guard and Henderson Hall. Victoria Pridemore, who's the assistant director with Valor Student Services. We had Sergeant Major Preston, Army National Guard, and Lieutenant Colonel Bowen, who was a chaplain, that came out and helped us recognize these District of Columbia residents that are still unaccounted for. And I want to also point out two other things. Charles Terry, he sang the POW MIA song. From what I understand, there was a lot of wet eyes after he sang that song, or as he was singing that song.
It was a lovely song. It really was.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I want to give a special thanks out to the Capitol Guardian Youth Challenge Academy. These young folks have had challenges in their lives, and they go to this academy to get disciplined and to get put back on the right track. And these young folks showed up that morning without any rehearsal whatsoever. I gave them minimal instruction, went through their piece two or three times, maybe four times at the most. And they were absolutely professional. They were right on cue, and as a matter of fact, they made suggestions to me that helped to make their portion look good. So that's kind of the crux of what happened of the ceremony and the purpose of the ceremony. And this apparently was the first time in the District of Columbia that the POW MIA flag was raised over a district government building. And so we're looking to continue this and make this a tradition every year, and to try to expand on it. And we had a good showing of the Veterans Service Organization folks coming out. There were civilians that were participating as well. So it was a great ceremony.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, that's the thing. You bring up the Youth Academy, and I think that's the thing that I find most moving. Is you've got these kids out there from high school, and you've got these veterans sitting out there, some of them well into their 70s, maybe into their 80s, and you've got this young woman from GW, and all these people are there, and they come together for a solitary purpose. And that's what I find so moving, because it's hard, you know, old people have their issues, young people have their issues, but when it comes to veterans, it seems, and I don't know that this is true for everybody, but it seems that cuts across all kind of age and socioeconomic groups. There are people that understand how important you guys are, and how much our freedom depends on you, and they come together, and they all, you know, they're all there to acknowledge you, and I think that's a really lovely thing. And by the way, before we go any further, let me thank both of you for your service, because I come from a military family, and that's what we were always taught to do. So thank you for your service, and thanks for the ceremony on Friday. I think you're absolutely right. We have to do that We have to do that over and over again. Every year, we need to start a tradition. And so I think it really went well, and I was honored to be able to speak at it. And that was really the most inspirational thing, to see those young kids, to see those old faces in the crowd, to see the honor guard, and the chaplain. You know, you had a lieutenant colonel there, and a bunch of enlisted people and you know, civilians, and it was just amazing to see everybody come together and support you guys. Kathleen, do you have a...
I'm still here, yes. And I guess I was thinking, I remember when I worked for Pat Schroeder and my responsibility was your Armed Services Committee, I would say that I didn't have the best maybe viewpoint or feeling about the military. And I tell you, once I started working within the Armed Services, and her subcommittee was personnel, and I got to go to Kaiserslautern and to different bases in Europe and throughout the United States. And I tell you, I totally changed my opinion, because I had never seen so many dedicated people to protect us, you know, for what we believe in, and at a consequence of losing their life and leaving their family behind. So I have immense respect for soldiers, especially those that are enlisted, like the E4s, E5s, E6s. They're doing something so great for us. And, you know, I always remember when they went to Europe, they had so much, it was so different. And, you know, some of them were so young. So I met so many different soldiers. And I tell you, I immediately changed my viewpoint about the military. You know, it's just incredible what you guys do. And I want to thank you for your service, too. So, you know, that was my take from it. I have so much respect for people who lay their life on the line, you know, so that I can vote, so that I can be a woman and enjoy liberties and be able to work and, you know, be able to pursue what makes me happy. So thank you both very much.
Oh, no.
You're welcome.
Let's get John in here, because I know he's waiting patiently on the phone there. And let me ask you a question, John. Can you tell us, I know that you've got some things coming up soon, and I'm sure that our listeners would not only like to know what you guys are going to do in the near future, but also how to get involved in that. Can you tell us what you've got on the front burner, what's coming up? I know you'll have stuff for Veterans Day and other right. stuff.
Surely. So I'm sure one thing our veterans out there, and even the community, is probably not aware of, but in 2000, when the USS Cole was attacked and we lost some veterans, the VFW, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, committed to recognizing and honoring those who have lost their lives for the next 2 decades. So, and part of that recognition is every October 12th, each post across the nation, wherever those individuals are buried, and we have four here in the local area, where we ensure that an appropriate wreath is placed on the on their burial ground at Arlington National Cemetery, and that's going to happen October 12th, and it has happened, you know, every October 12th since 2001, and we will continue that until the 20 years is up. So that's coming up in October 12th. And then, you know, being involved with the local VFW District of Columbia, you know, if you want to come out and find out what we're all about, you know, this will be we're putting on our second annual Veterans Day Ball on November 6th November 7th. At Bolin Air Force Base, at the Bolin Air Force Base Club. And if you need to find out or want to find out more information about that, you can contact us and send us some information on our website, which is www.dcvfw.org.
I gotta stop you here for a second, John, because I was at that event last year.
Yes, sir.
And it was great. It was a great event. So if you're out there and you want to attend, an event is the one to do it, and maybe I'm lucky enough to get invited back. But you have to change my diet to get back into my tuxedo. I've had a tough summer. Ate too much pizza and ice cream, but it's a great event. It really is. I'm sorry, John. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you can contact us out there, and we'll give you ticket information and who to reach out to, so you can purchase your ticket. It's a formal affair, you know, black tie or business. You know, if you don't have a tux, we don't want to eliminate anybody. You know, but we'd like for the community to come out, more especially reaching out to the vets in the area, whether you are a D.C. vet or not, you know, just come out and support. Typically, as a theme, last year we honored the Vietnam vets, and this year I think it'll be Korean War vets. But no matter the occasion, it's honoring Veterans Day, and I think that's the same day as the Marine Corps Ball, but, you know, it's never too many venues, you know, to recognize Veterans Day. So if you can't make the Marine Corps Ball, you can make our ball.
That's right. And who wants to stand around all those Marines in their dress uniforms? They look so good, you know. There's no way you can, you know, you're going to look like a bump on a log standing next to a bunch of handsome young men in those uniforms. And I got to tell you, I respect all the services. But those guys, they really did win the lottery when it came to dress uniforms. They're really sharp looking.
No one can deny that. No branch of service. I'm an Air Force guy, but that's all right. They, you know, those guys are sharp. I want to thank you guys for extending an invitation to the District of Columbia VFW, and I extended the invitation to my department commander, and I was hoping she was calling in. I don't know if she's already done that and waiting.
No, she hasn't yet, but we still got some time left.
Okay,
And I'm monopolizing things. So, Kathleen, what do you got to say?
Well, I wanted to ask how many MIAs are still unaccounted for, and, you know, are we doing anything as a country to, you know, maybe get the fullest accounting possible for these, you know, for the men and women?
Well, we had announced, I think it was 36 names, 38 names.
That's
for DC.
Correct, 36.
36 for DC.
Wow.
And the VFW, I would like to say, is at the forefront of ensuring that there's a full account. We make our executive leadership for the national VFW makes trips every year back to Vietnam, back to Korea. And believe it or not, every year, I hear that we have found another body, or we have identified another body, you know. So that's what we're continuing to do, and that's what we will do.
So
in addition to that, there's approximately 80, a little more than 80,000 unaccounted for, and there are organizations out there that are dedicated to trying to get the fullest accountability as possible. And they actually maintain databases, and they look at they're in contact with the family members. They make sure that they remain involved and they're up to date on what's going on. And as a matter of fact, the lady who was with the POW, excuse me for getting this wrong, but the National League for Families of POWs, Lacey Rourke, and she was instrumental in helping us make sure that we had talked properly about POWs and MIAs, and helped us with the coordination of the event. So there's a lot of organizations out there that are dedicated to trying to get the fullest accountability as possible.
Well, you know, we should also mention that there still are POWs in the world. Not POWs. That may not be the right term. Hostages. Today, two Americans were released in Yemen by Shiite rebels. So, you know, this is not what the military does in remembering these people and trying to get a full accounting. That's not something that just relates to the past. It's also something that is current and moves forward. We must always be diligent on this front, because it's an ongoing process, and I think some people don't realize that. But let me ask you something, James. Tell us what's going on with the mayor. We have a new mayor in the district, and she seems more committed to veterans than mayors in the past. Am I right about that? I mean, I know there's been a reorganization, and that our good friend Tammy Lambert is in charge of, what's veterans going on in the mayor's office? The new
MOVA.
MOVA. Right. So, what about the mayor?
Okay, so the mayor has an agenda for creating a pathway for the middle class, and she's including the veterans in there. And the way that she's doing that is working through Tammy Lambert, as you just mentioned, who is the director of the mayor's Office of Veterans Affairs. And there's been some significant changes, and one of the changes that I want to talk about is that they restructured the advisory board, and they have some dynamite people that the mayor has brought on to ensure that she gets the advice that she needs in order to make the appropriate decisions to assist the veteran population. Ms. Director Lambert, she's going out and she's meeting with key people to ensure that the District of Columbia isn't forgotten about, because when you look at the Veterans Affairs, they generally work with states at the state level, which kind of taps back into the crux of your show and why it's important for D.C. to get the support to be for statehood. But we can talk about that a little bit later. And so she's making sure that the District of Columbia is getting the appropriate visibility that they need, that the district needs, so the district can continue to get benefits to assist the veterans. Now, another thing that she's working towards, or that is being worked towards collectively, is veterans courts. Now, right now, we have the veterans are being advised, but there's not a court set aside specifically for veterans. And a lot of times, not to talk bad about the court system, but it's just sometimes it's just a situation that they're just unaware of the special needs that veterans have. And when you start talking about veterans that have post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury, that may contribute to a lot of their actions that cause them to end up in court, and there may be special needs that they need other than incarceration or some other type of punishment. It may need some type of mental health type of assistance. So those are the things that the mayor is working hard towards as far as assisting veterans. And then there's also the affordable housing that's being looked into, and seeing how we can initiate legislation towards assisting veterans. And there's a couple of models out there. Mississippi, Montana, and Texas have some affordable housing models that we can look towards. And what that does is helps veterans to get low-interest loans. As a matter of fact, Montana has a Senate Bill 326 that was initiated back in 2011 that creates the Veterans Home Loan Mortgage Program to fund loans for first-time veteran home buyers. And this money is allocated from a permanent coal tax and trust fund. So there's a lot of things that's going on that we're looking at, or that the mayor is looking at, and seeing how we can bring that into the district. And then that's where my caucus comes into play, because there are some limitations that the mayor has that I can my caucus can pick up on and work with the mayor's office through the Director Lambert's office, the MOVA, and helping to push legislation through.
Well, you know, first of all, veteran homelessness is a disgrace. There should be no such thing as a homeless veteran. That's number one. And number two, you talk about this program. How many of our parents, how many of our fathers bought their first houses through a government loan program for veterans. I mean, I don't even understand why we don't have a nationwide program like that. But you know what? We have Roseanne Clark, the commander, on the phone, and we'd like to bring her in. You want to introduce her, John?
I do. So standing by is the current department commander for the Veterans of Foreign Wars for the District of Columbia. And Rose is going to share with you, Commander Clark is going to share with you some of the programs, the critical programs that we participate in the local area to support veterans, their families, and the communities in which they live. Rose?
Great. Commander, are you there?
Hello?
Hi, Commander.
Hello?
Commander Clark, thanks so much for being on our show. Can you hear us?
I cannot hear you.
You cannot hear us. We're having technical difficulties. John, see if we can straighten that out, and we'll get back to her in a minute.
Okay.
Okay. We'll try to bring her on. Obviously, we can hear her, but she can't hear us. We'll call her back and see if we might have a bad connection or something. Moving on, I've got to tell you that every year I ride, and I want either one of you guys to give me your input on this, but every year I ride to the wall on Memorial Day with thousands and thousands of veterans. So one of the things that I get from these veterans is that they don't feel appreciated. And it really bothers me, you know, because I grew up in an America that did, where everybody appreciated veterans, you know, and certainly the Vietnam veterans don't feel that they've gotten the right recognition. Do you think something's changed in America about our attitude towards veterans?
John, you want to take this?
Yeah. So I don't think the attitudes have changed. You know, I just think our method of communicating and connecting, you know, to veterans and the different eras of veterans or generations of veterans, you have to find some common ground. This is the issue that we're dealing with, and every service veteran organization is dealing with, not just the Veterans of Foreign Wars, is, re-energizing the VSOs and recruiting and getting, you know, current, the membership up, you know, so that, inviting these members in or the veterans in to help facilitate, taking care of the community and making the community aware of who's in, what veterans are in the community. I don't think it's changed, you know.
Good.
It's just an awareness thing in how we communicate with the vets and find some common ground with them and make them feel appreciated. Just going by saying, hey, thank you for your service, you know, they get that a lot.
Yep.
What else are you doing? What else are you doing? So.
Yep, you have to do that. We have the commander back, I think.
Okay.
Commander, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I'm sorry we lost you, Commander. You know, technology being what it is, sometimes it doesn't work the way you planned. But thanks so much for being on our show tonight. We really appreciate it. Both James and John have been a great guest, but we wanted to talk to you and ask you about a few of the programs that you're in charge of. Can you explain to us what the VOD is?
Yes, the VOD, first of all, let me say my name is Roseanne Clark, and I am the commander of the District of Columbia VFW.
Thank you for your service, Commander.
Thank you. Okay, the Voice of Democracy is a program that VFW sponsor each year for students in the D.C. area. And this Voice of Democracy program is an audio essay program for 9th and 12th through 12th grade students that live in the District of Columbia. This audio essay should be recorded on a CD or a flash drive for presentation to be scored for selection on the essay contest. Now, the suspense time for this is 1st of November, November 1st. And the awardees, first of all, let me say this. The theme for this year is My Vision for America. So this is what the essay will be based on, this theme, My Vision for America. And it will be recorded on a CD and sent on to headquarters or to the post in D.C., which is my post. We will read those essays, and we will select from those essays the best suitable essay that we receive. Before all of this takes place, we, the VFW members, will go to the schools and talk with the teachers for a selection of students that can participate in this program. This year, the program, the winner will receive at least $1,000 if they were selected here in the D.C. area. If their essay is submitted on to the state and they happen to win at state level, they will receive $35,000.
Wow, $35,000. That's great.
Yes. But remember, they have to be the number one winner to get $35. But yep, they give all the other students, you know, incrementals of maybe $5,000, $10,000, depending on where they are selected. And the point of contact for the Voice of Democracy program is Mr. Clinton Townsend, and he can be reached at 339-4053.
Give that number again, Commander, so everybody gets it.
703-339-4053.
Well, thanks. That sounds like a great, you know, as a dad who's just paid for his first kid to go through college and is working on his second kid to go through college and is looking at his third, $35,000, that would be a great incentive.
Right.
And can you tell us what else are you doing? I know you have a program called Patriot 10.
The Patriot 10. Yes, this is also for students in the D.C. area, 6th grade through 8th grade. This is a written essay with 300 to 400 words maximum. The winner will receive $15,000, and the least one can receive is $500. But if you are the winner statewide, you will receive $15,000.
That's
and
great.
And the theme for this year is What Freedom Means to Me.
Well, I'd love to read some of those, because I'd love to see what freedom means to kids today. I'm sure it has a different meaning than it had for us, and I'm sure a lot of it is also the same. Kathleen, do you have some questions for the commander? I'm sorry, I don't want to monopolize your time.
I know how you love to do that. You're a politician, but we'll forgive
you.
Commander, I guess my question to you is, you know, I lived in D.C., went to school there and left, but I've come back often. And one thing that always amazes me is that D.C. does not have, you know, representation. You know, to me, it was like, I just remember taxation with representation, you know, that was just something that was about America and democracy. And knowing D.C. as well as I do, it really, I guess I have a lot of sorrow that there are so many of you that serve this country, yet you don't have full representation. Do you think down the road, maybe when you guys do another essay, that maybe statehood could be brought into what would statehood mean to the citizens of, you know, of the District of Columbia? Or, I mean, do you guys have any resentment to the fact that you go and you serve your country, you have a chance to be injured, you make a huge sacrifice, you can lose your life, and yet you don't get the same rights that so many other people, that everyone else does in our country?
Well, it's sad at times, but then we were here and we went out there to serve our country. not really expecting anything in return, but it will be very appreciative if all of us who served were recognized for the good deeds that we did for our country.
Yes, and that's one of the things about military service. You know, this is what I always say to people when it comes to jobs, and I want to talk to you about jobs in a minute because I know that's important, especially to veterans. But, you know, I always say to employers, these are people that have been pre-tested. When you hire a veteran, this is somebody that's already made a commitment, and they've made a commitment for you know, based on the highest ideals, because you're right, Commander, they don't go into it expecting a return. They go into it for many reasons, but there's one reason that always seems to be there, in my opinion, from the veterans I know, and that's a love, a deep, deep love for their country. And
right.
I think that kind of commitment translates into a committed worker. And so these people have been pre-tested, and they've shown that they can commit and do a good job. What about jobs? Anybody that wants to answer this question of the three of you, what are we doing to help veterans find jobs? Because I know they have high unemployment.
Well, the VFW, under the command of our new elected Commander-in-Chief, John Brzezinski, unveiled at the latest national convention in Pittsburgh a jobs program called Pittsburgh Hires Vets. We're trying to, in the process of trying to build that program locally here in D.C. and then, you know, in whatever city across the United States. And the program is, you know, a simple program that has strategic partners. In Pittsburgh, it's a group of manufacturing companies that have committed to hiring vets. And there's a process that they go through, to employ these people. And we want to do the same thing in D.C., and not just on manufacturing. We want to do it in the IT community. We want to do it in the security services area. We want to do it in, whatever job area that's available, and even in the private sector. If you have jobs available and you like to hire, you know, a vet, you can go through this program. And you mentioned it, Senator. Veterans are tested. They're trained. They're committed. They're loyal. You know, you won't find a harder working individual to employ. So, and then, you know, along with this program, some of these companies are also giving free training. You know, so we're trying to do our part to help ensure that, vets have gainful employment and training to execute that employment.
Well, that's great, and I really do believe that. I believe that when you give a veteran a job, you're not doing him a favor, you're doing yourself a favor.
Exactly.
Because I believe they are, the best possible employees you can get. How about you, James? Are we pushing jobs in D.C. through the state committee or the mayor's office?
Well, right now, there's approximately 31,000 veterans in D.C., and they own 7.2% of the D.C. businesses, and they're generating $1.9 million in receipts, and they employ about 14,000 people. And so where we have a fair representation, there's absolutely a lot more that we can do. And we can work through the Small Business Administration as far as training and resources to help help those who want to start their businesses, and help those that need assistance in continuing their business to also do that. And when you look at the statistics of veterans in like public administration, transportation, manufacturing, and like science and technology, there's veterans, they're doing pretty well in that respect. But again, with STEM programs and things like that, we can do a little bit more to help them, because when you look at as far as retail, arts and entertainment, and as well as education and healthcare, the veterans aren't employed as much as they are in those other areas that I just spoke of. So we need to do find out what we need to do to help the veterans to excel in those areas where they're kind of falling a little bit behind, and to also get that number of 7.2% up as far as veterans-owned businesses, because you can see that with that small number of businesses, they're employing a lot of people. So if we can find incentives to increase that number, then we can also increase the number of people that that can be employed by those businesses.
That's great. Kathleen, do you have... are you still with us, or did you fall asleep?
No, I'm still with you, because this is a very big subject to me. You know, I am more than awake. But, Commander, as a female, how do you feel? Are female veterans part of the mix? I mean, I usually, you know, with veterans, I do a lot of work for a gentleman called Jay Allen, who was part of the Thunder, Rolling Thunder, the 25th anniversary. And I see a lot of guys on bikes, you know, that's why I see veterans. I don't get a chance to see or run into a lot of representation of women veterans. Is that something that's changing, or am I just maybe not looking in the right places?
Probably you're not looking in the right places. There are many female veterans out there today. Many female veterans there. There are many organizations for females who were in the military. So, yes, we do have representation all over. I think they're doing better employing women also, because at the agency I'm with, they've hired several female veterans in the federal government. So I know things are changing, and women will be more visible soon. And also, even with our VFW, we have women who are commanders. There are seven women that were elected this year for commander, state commanders. So we are improving. We're getting better.
And if I might say, a Navy SEAL. We have a Navy, right? A woman Navy SEAL now.
That's
or two
right.
women that are
two.
Navy SEALs.
Yeah, two.
And, yes.
And if I might say, Commander Clark is the first female department commander for the District of Columbia. So she has set history, you know, within the VFW District of Columbia.
Well, that's congratulations.
Great. And let me just add, you know, I worked for Patricia Schroeder, Congresswoman Patricia Schroeder from Denver, Colorado, who was very involved in women's rights within the military. And, you know, I remember those days. Remember I was at Navygate? Remember the scandal? She was very involved in that. So it's so great to hear that things have changed. It's hard to believe it's been that many years, but it's great to see that as big of an organization as the military complex is, that it's changing. And it takes time, but it's good to hear that it's happening.
Takes time, right. But it's happening, right. It's
I think the problem here, Kathleen, is you're flirting with those Marines in their dress blues and not paying attention to the
paying attention.
That are
there
out there.
You go. Or I just see out with
play.
A lot of
they
bikers.
Are, they are handsome devils in there when they're dressed up.
I've been hanging around with too many bikers, so I got to
check. Yeah,
you all talking about those Marines. I'm a former Marine, so I'm just over here blushing and loving every minute of it.
Hey, there's no such thing as a former Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Yeah, that's
there you
right.
go. Yeah. Simplify, always
right.
faithful.
Simplify,
man.
Always faithful. That's right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've come, believe it or not, we're getting close to the end of our hour. We usually stop and play a song, but we're going to play it going out as a tribute to you all, because we are so thankful for everything that you guys have done. We know that freedom is not free, and that you've paid the check for all of us. So thank you all for your service. Commander Clark, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
John and James, thanks for being on the show. And you know what?
Thank you.
I hope you guys will come back. We'll because we want to update people on what's going on with veterans.
Sure.
You know, you should never pass a veteran without saying thank you, because everything we get to do with which Kathleen pointed out is because of you guys. So thank you so much, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Yes, and let me just add, as a woman, I want to thank you guys very much for protecting my rights, because today's world, as I look out there, it just scares me, and I'm just happy that there's someone that is willing to make that sacrifice. So thank you both. Thank you, all three of you, very much.
All right.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you. Next week, folks, plan to join us because we have a lot of interesting things to talk about. We're going to try to squeeze a few of them in today, but you know, it was so great to have three veterans on the show, you know, to talk about this stuff that's so interesting. But the Pope is coming to Washington, D.C., and I know that Kathleen and I were raised Catholics.
Now
some of us spent more time in the confessional than others. I don't want to mention any names.
Hey, I went to Catholic school.
But we will. We want to talk about the Pope. This is a very interesting Pope. He's so much different.
Yes.
And we're so anxious to hear what he has to say to the United States Congress. So we want to talk about that next week. Also, Republican candidates, come on. Fiorina's going up. Donald's going down. You know,
this just shows how fickle we are. We're so fickle that we would, everything goes up, you know, based on, I mean, she did a great comeback. You can't do anything. She could, nobody could come back like she did. But for all of a sudden, everyone to be riding on that basis, that comment, just shows how messed up we are as a country. That's all I can say.
And on that note, we will leave. We will exit with Lee Greenwood. And this is dedicated to our three guests tonight. Thanks for coming on the show, and we'll see you next week, America.
Thanks to all of you who serve for our country, too.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life. And I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars.
Give the people their right to vote.